is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. It is our great pleasure to be with Mary Ann Mason, Dr. Mary Ann Mason, also a lawyer, most recently the Dean of the Graduate School at the University of California, Berkeley, Bill Russell. I, Paula. Dr. Mason, the notion of how do you take an enterprise, whether it is a profession, the university itself, the corporate world, and keep it fresh, keep it flexible, adaptive,
yes,
in a dramatically changing time, and make sure you have used all of the, and I say used with the double entendre intended, use your human resource in such a way that you are forwarding the enterprise's ends, economics aside. These things are very relevant to everything, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I think his notion of the sabbatical being the time in which you refresh your creative energies, it's not just true for the university. It's something that would be very useful in all professions, but particularly those that depend on energy and creativity and new ideas at all times, which is the group that we've been looking at here.
That kind of creativity,
yes,
and the need for innovation, all of those things really need this kind of thinking, don't they, Dr. Mason?
They do, and I think Bill mentioned that universities have grown very accustomed to sabbaticals, and it just becomes a way of life, and they understand the concept. That doesn't mean they were giving it for mothers or any other reason or flexibility. Now they are, and partly it was the analogy to sabbaticals that made it possible to convince the universities that, particularly our University of California, that flexibility at many times during the career are necessary and will ultimately make a better employee. I don't see this so much in the corporate world or in law offices. It's a little bit too much now or nothing. But again, I think this is a good time because there are enough corporations who are taking a leading edge. Deloitte and Touche is only one of them. There are others in the Silicon Valley. Many of these companies pride themselves on being family friendly, and they have on-site daycare. They have cafeterias that are open 24 hours, etc. And they do this partly because they want to keep their employees happy. They want to keep them there. They want to hold on to them when other companies are bidding after them. So competition is a really important motive as well. That's just easy for all corporations to understand, that if another company does something that's attracting the best women workers or the best men because they're family friendly, this will make a difference in terms of whether they're going to get the best employees.
I was really struck when you went back in Mothers on the Fast Track to talk about the passage in 1971, if I remember correctly, of a genuinely family-friendly policy coming from the federal government that Richard Nixon vetoed,
yes,
because it scared him that it looked like communism.
Yes.
Well, that's silly. let's see, the Soviets take care of their children, so we don't want to. Is that it? The way that these things intersect, the fact that the extremist wrong wing in America wants to push women back home in a fundamentalist sense,
yes,
these big overlying political things also have direct impact on all of these enterprises that together come together as a culture, as a society, and vice versa.
Yes. Well, it's really quite shocking. In addition to not having health care or pension plans, we also don't have any kind of daycare system because all of the leading industrial nations have a system in place that is far better. At least they have something. We have nothing in that regard. And that's a good point that it was 1971 because that was really kind of the peak of the women's movement. And, of course, it was the peak of Richard Nixon. It didn't last too much longer than that. So these two ideologies were kind of coming head to head. And the women's movement did not carry on with the idea of daycare or changing the workplace, etc. That idea rather got lost for about 30 years. Now it's coming back again strongly because I think there's a real recognition that we need daycare, universal daycare. We need all kinds of family paid leave. It's only unpaid at the moment, not just for the fast-track women, of course, but for all working mothers. And we don't seem to have the political collective will to go in that direction, nor do we seem to have a collective voice that's asking for it in the way that the women's movement not only asked for it, it really pushed for it and brought all kinds of lawsuits, etc. frankly, I think the time is very good for all of these issues. No one is really saying no. They're just not really doing it because they're not getting pushed strongly enough. They'll get pushed in the private market. This is happening in the universities and in universities and in the corporations. And it will also happen, of course, in law firms and the medical world when the competitive edge is to better support families. And people go to a university. I just heard from a young assistant professor the other day that he and his wife had come to Berkeley. I said, why did you come here rather than MIT where they had been? He said, oh, because we hear you have great family-friendly policies. Well, I mean, he didn't know me, or he knew me, but he didn't know that I'd been involved with this kind of work at all. And yet it was paying off. It was paying off for everyone. So there are many reasons why family-friendly policies are necessary and important, but it makes good business sense as well as other kinds of sense.
I found myself reading, particularly the first part of this, going through the statistics, listening to the, you know, the half-full version, and thinking, well, what about the rest of the OECD? What are other developed countries doing? Countries
yes.
that have the same cultural predicates that we do, and being the perceptive person you are, if I'd just been patient, I could read a few more chapters, and there it was. But it's, you know, that's yeah. one of the things that seems to me to be important. This is not an experiment,
yeah.
necessarily.
Yeah.
Others have done it?
Yes.
Nothing wrong with experiments, but
yeah.
we don't even have to do that. There are other countries that have done some very
right.
interesting things.
There are very good models. Now, it's always true that no country is exactly like your country. But what other countries have done, you know, most notably, I think France actually is quite a model in this direction, and the Scandinavian countries, of course, we know about. Their culture has moved in this direction for a long time now. They've had, for instance, they give baby bonuses to everyone. It's not just for the very poor, because babies and families are important, and everyone gets free health care. But everyone also gets inexpensive child care from early days on, and good free public schooling. So they have a commitment to their society putting their efforts into maintaining the family in all ways. And this also accommodates working mothers, partly because they know they need the working mothers for their economy. Germany just recently is really finally coming to put in a lot of family-friendly policies in place, largely because they want to get the women more involved in the workplace because they haven't got enough workers and they're pushed to it by that reason. In America, we've always assumed that people take care of themselves. It has to be a personal solution. But there are many things we can't personally solve. It has to be done at a different level. We can't personally solve a workplace that works 60 hours a week and will not accommodate for children. We can't personally solve the fact that we don't have medical insurance for children if we leave our workplace. There are many things that need to be collective decisions. There's a certain amount of individual effort and imagination that we can each use, but the large structural things have to be attacked in a collective way.
And you say that's the task of the pioneers' daughters and granddaughters.
Yes, and of course, it's their task to get the message out. The people that will make it actually work are the politicians and others, but there doesn't seem, again, even to be the political will for my daughter's generation to get to get it.
Politicians follow, they don't lead.
Exactly. So they have to demand it, and there hasn't been the demand.
Well, but I also want to give credit where credit is due. I am very impressed with what you personally and with the people you work with at Berkeley have been able to accomplish, mm-hmm. Both within the institution itself, the family-friendly, but it's much bigger than that.
Yes, it is.
Family-friendly, you know, it doesn't begin to cover the subject. And what you call restructuring the workplace.
Yes.
Which is, you know, what you apply across the board. But you not only have written about it, you've actually participated in making the kinds of changes
yes.
at Berkeley, but not only at Berkeley, but at other higher institutions. And part of it, I'm sure, is the competitive.
It is.
But that to me is a cause for hope. And it also means we don't have to dump the whole burden off on your daughter.
Well, good point. Good. Because she's not willing to take the whole burden. But it also shows that it's possible to be done, and it's not, you don't really have that much counterforce, because everyone recognizes that it's a useful thing to have. And once you bring it up, of course, you have an enormous amount of support from working parents at the university who see this as, you know, why didn't this happen earlier? Or people who have had to drop out of the university world, if only they'd had this in place, I could have helped. And I particularly started with my graduate students, because we did a survey which showed that they changed their goals from the beginning, men and women at the beginning of their career, more than 50%. 50% wanted to be professors at major research universities and another 27% at four-year colleges. But after a couple of years as a PhD student, they said, hell no, I don't want that life. You know, that, right. This is just right. too difficult. I don't see how I can not take a break. And women, particularly, when they're more likely to change their goals away, and the main reason was, I don't see how I can fit a family into this. So we tried to make it possible for them to see being possible as parents when they're graduate students and assistant professors and all the way through and
can
how we can
summarize how you did that?
Well, a number of different steps, starting from the beginning of the pipeline. For the graduate students, we offer, you know, paid maternity leave, family housing, a student-parent bonus, stopping the clock for graduate students. And again, the most important thing is for the advisors, for the professors themselves, to get the message and become acculturated and not believe that when a student has a child, they're going to be lost to the world of science or to the world of literature. When, unfortunately, at the current time, when a male student has a child, they think, this guy's now going to be a straight-up Joe and going to work hard, hard, hard. When a woman has a child, they think, not serious. We're not going to take her seriously anymore. So that double standard is very, very active in the university and elsewhere, I think. So starting with the graduate school years, making sure that the faculty and the chairs know exactly what the new rules are and what the consequences are if you don't follow them. There have actually been a number of suits against universities who have shown any kind of discrimination based on parental issues, let's put it that way, which is always a way in which universities listen up. And then for faculty from the beginning, using family-friendly policies to attract young families, men and women, dual career, very important issue in all of these industries and institutions, try to accommodate the, as they call them, the trailing partner, including resettling, relocation with housing, for their children to figure out how to send their kids to school. Many things that you can do as an employer to recruit the best people by showing attention to their family and to their family needs. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the time off the clock for childbirth, the part-time track. Interestingly, because we surveyed all the UC faculty across the 10 campuses, a huge majority of both men and women wanted a part-time track at some time during their life. A lot of them thought in terms of their older years or their parents' older years. So it's not that family responsibilities are just for the very young. It happens all through your life. If you have physical difficulties, which many people do as they move on toward life, to be able to count on the fact that you can take time off and that it's respected and you're not going to lose your place in the line or at your job is extraordinarily important.
This is Dr. Mary Ann Mason, who with her daughter Eve Mason Ekman has written Mothers on the Fast Track, How a New Generation Can Balance Family and Careers. We'll talk about more about how that can be done when we return in just a moment.